Okay, everybody, if anybody is here to explore with me this concept of sleeping giants, of economic shift change, can I ask you to come on over and join the rest of the crew at the front here? Welcome, everybody. Find a space where you're nice and comfortable. Try to group in as much as possible. Come on over if you're coming. Okay. I'm going to take the first couple of minutes to ask if anybody in the audience knows any of those fun things you do after lunch kind of things to get your head back in the game, to get your eyes focused. Has anyone got one of those things that you do to kind of wake yourself up? Please. Sophie, come on, you must have one. You've got one going. Okay. Can you reconnect us, reawaken?
Okay, so everybody stand up. It's the easiest thing. And as you stand up, you stretch your arms into the air. You take a deep breath in. And as you breathe out, bring your arms down and go. Okay, and then arms out to the sides. And then as you breathe in, as you breathe out, bring your arms, your hands to your hips and go wah, wah, wah. And as you do that, you need to wiggle your ass a little bit. So wah, 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 wah. This seems to be sort of reasonably... Okay, let's try that once more because I think it could be a little bit better than that. So arms up near and down, hands to your hips. Wah, 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 wah. Okay, one more. You want more? Okay, so you need to hands up in the air again. And then as if your arms are coming out of your head, and you lift your feet up. Very much, well done, thank you. And you go. There you go, that'll do.
Thank you. Apparently, to awaken the sleeping giants of economic shift change, we need to kind of awaken our minds a little bit and get ourselves connected in. It's a site, you know. The economic giants, in my mind, are actually psychological giants, so we need to get ourselves connected in. What I want to do first of all is take the opportunity to just introduce Reconomy Project, just for a few minutes, before I get into the kind of thrust of what I'm going to be talking about. So does anybody in the room feel they've got a handle on what Reconomy Project is? And I'm not putting my hand up either, so... Brilliant, brilliant. Can you tell us? No, I'll have a go at it. I'll have a go. Essentially, Reconomy Project was set up about 18 months ago by the Transition Network to explore this kind of area of enterprise and economy. And we've come up with this tagline that we're helping you build your new local economy where you live. And it's supposed to be everything that we can do to support you along that way. So there's loads of different kinds of resources that we're trying to signpost and point towards. We're trying to flag up all these inspirational examples. Now, yesterday we dedicated a whole day to the practicalities of Reconomy, some of those amazing enterprises, some of those incredible strategic activities that people are doing. And collectively, those things that we were watching yesterday kind of started to create this collage of what we could say was the new economy. So that's kind of what Reconomy is doing. Now, before I start, yesterday we kind of started to get an idea of what the new economy would look like, but I need some paper. But we got an idea of what the new economy would look like, but I want you to start shouting out some words that kind of depict the new economy for you. Hold on a second. So anybody, just give me a word, two words, a small sentence, something that you think is a feature of that new economy. Local. I'm going to have to write faster, I think. Cooperative, yeah. What was the other one? Local we've got. Was that local, was it? Need space. I've got you, brilliant. needs based, yeah? Community based. I'm going to spell things wrong as we go, no worries about that. Ethical. Resilient, we like. Recycling, affordable. We got local, but it's very important, so I'm glad we're getting that out quite a few times. Global, brilliant. I like it because it's so easy for us to fit into what's comfortable and say local, but it is of course also global. Any more? Responsive. Yeah. Gift. Diverse. Okay. Any more? I'm just trying to think if you've covered the ones that I want you to cover. Responsible. Inclusive. Transparent. Huh? Life enhancing, brilliant. So I'm gonna ask you a couple of questions just so I can get the ones that I want in as well. Closed cycle, brilliant. Responsive. Got it. Just a quick question. How does economic growth fit into the new economy? How does economic growth fit into the new economy? What would be a word or something you might have phrased that we could throw in there that just... Steady state. Okay. Sorry? Carrying capacity. So that kind of resource limitations sort of understanding. I've got it. Yeah. Okay, can I ask a question? Go for it. Contraction of the old, growth of the new. Can we just log that one because I'm getting... go for it. Breathing. Okay, great. And right now where I live, in my neighbourhood, I live in a kind of dormitory for consumers. Is there anything in the new economy that kind of you would, you know, how would that fit into the new economy? Would I still be able to live in a dormitory of consumers? Do you know what I'm saying? My estate where I live, there's 500 houses, and none of us produce anything. None of us, we go off to work and we come back, and we just live in that space. We don't produce anything in those spaces. Yeah, local production, brilliant. I'm going to use the word kind of DIY, do it yourself, make it yourself, kind of grow it yourself, build it yourself, that kind of a... So I'm going to use DIY, just because I wanted it in here for later. Okay, last one. Dynamic, brilliant. We'll put that in the middle. Okay, so... Somewhere in these new economic kind of these features that probably mean absolutely nothing to you from a distance, but they're there on a piece of paper scribbled, are often things that are beautiful, things like sharing, giving, but it's very easy for us and actually quite normal for us to think about these things as kind of niche. You know, they're okay in this environment, they work, but when we get out onto the high street, there's no real traction, there's a massive uphill battle. So it's very easy for us to fall into that mindset of we're kind of a little bit isolated with this, and actually making the whole globe work with these kinds of principles is a massive leap. Does that sound familiar? Okay, good. So before I go into anything any further into this, What I'm going to try and do is explain to you the process that we're going to go through. So I kind of argue that one or two of these features aren't minor. They're not marginal. They're not a niche. In fact, they're so big, economically speaking, they are equal to a sleeping giant. And if we just triggered that giant, they would be, it would shift our current economic system. So, and I'm going to try and campaign for that. And hopefully, depending on how you guys respond, you're going to either agree or disagree with me. And there is no real right answer to this. I've done it a couple of times, and each time it's come out differently. So there's no perfect scenario. We just go through it. So I'm going to try and convince you that these sleeping giants exist, and that they're essentially ready to awaken and shift our economy. Okay. Before we go too far into this, I want to take a moment. The backdrop of all this, we have to remember that we are in extraordinary times. I'd like you to raise your hands right now if you feel, or you've sensed in the past at some point, you've had this kind of sense that we're actually in extraordinary times. Does that sound familiar to some of you? So the backdrop to this awakening giant type thought pattern is actually we are in these extraordinary times. So I want you to close your eyes. Those of you who have not had that feeling, that sense, try to tap into that. Try to feel that's plausible, it's possible. Those of you who have had that sense of extraordinary times, I want you to close your eyes. Try and tap into a moment, maybe a moment where you felt that really strongly. Maybe a conversation that you've had. For me personally, I went to a festival recently, and it just reconnected me with the depth of change that was happening at that event. And so, I'm going to just tap into that moment myself for a few minutes and remember that we are in extraordinary times. Okay, so just, what I'm going to try and do is anybody in here an expert in economics? Really knows their stuff? Good, so I can make it up as I go along, that doesn't matter. So I most definitely am not an expert in economics, but I've had the luck or the pleasure of being engaged in Reconomy Project over the last 18 months, and that's forced me to embed myself in the world of economics. And so I've been lucky to see tendencies and changes that I think are stirring these kind of sleeping giants. So, but just to flag up, I'm not an expert, and I think the collective wisdom of this room, actually, it would be good to kind of explore these ideas together and use that expertise. The importance of what we're about to do, it's not a mean feat of what we're about to do. The idea of having a positive vision of the future is, in my view, one of the most important things that we could be doing, and not just a kind of vision of the future that's based in theory and idea, but a vision of the future that's based in grounded in practical reality. I'm going to skip this slide. It just tells you who I am, but all you really need to know is the last 18 months I've been working with Reconomy, and that's the stuff that's directly related to what I'm talking about now. So I'm going to introduce the first sleeping giant. My first sleeping giant is kind of the cooperation, the cooperatives, but the cooperative, the word cooperative, doesn't really cover the full breadth of this. Collaboration, all of these different kinds of sharing and working together to solve problems compared to the current economic model where it's the corporate model with competition, etc. So my first giant, and the reason that this is a giant is because, does anybody know that 3 billion people on the planet, their livelihoods are dependent on cooperatives, a salary from cooperatives? Did you know that? Did anybody know that more people work in cooperatives today than people that work in multinationals? So the reality, this is stats from, I think it's Cooperatives UK, I'm not sure, but there's lots of these different kinds of stats coming out right now. The last 18 months, I've seen a lot of these kind of bits of information saying, wow, I didn't realize that. And it's been a real eye-opener for me to say that actually this is a giant in economic terms. It's not just a minority group. So we're in back today which is a community-owned building. It works on a kind of cooperative principle. It's a community space run by the community, working in a kind of cooperative principle. But Back isn't isolated. Back is part of, it is the, you know, a very visible part of a much bigger world. So when we see these things and our high street doesn't reflect Back, the Battersea Arts Centre, we should start to think that actually there is actually underneath that iceberg, there's this huge sleeping giant. So there's a couple of things going on right now that's modernising the cooperative movement. It's no longer like what it used to be. And there's lots of new cooperative models, new ways of doing things. And also a significant player in this kind of idea of cooperation is open source software. The open source world in itself is a giant. You can say it's its own giant almost, but also you could put it together with the existing offline cooperative movement and say together they are an infinitely more powerful giant. So just examples that we're seeing up and down the country: community-owned pubs, community-owned shops, industrial provident societies to run energy companies. There's just this upswell of diversity of that cooperative model going on in the modern, in the Western world, in the rich world. We're seeing this real kind of innovation, this kind of renaissance in how you work together. Let's have a look. What have we got? Yeah, I think community ownership of 500,000 acres in Scotland is another way. So an example of the online collaboration movement. Does anyone know the statistics of how much software, how much of the websites that we surf today are made through collaboration, made through open source software? I have to say I don't know, so I was hoping someone did. But my gut feeling is, and I think you know it's grounded in reality, is a huge portion. It could be 40%, it could be 60%, but a large portion of the software that we use every day was made in these kind of collaborative forms. And Wikipedia is probably the iconic example of collaboration, although it's not designing software, but it's outstripped the Britannica encyclopedias. We had this moment where all of a sudden, 500 times more powerful than the old model for producing something efficiently. What's starting to happen is the online collaboration movement is starting to shift offline now. So this car was designed online through open source kind of processes, and then they put it into practice. It's supposed to be super, it's saying it's incredibly energy efficient, but that's not really, it's the principles. I don't care that cars are bad or good. That's not really what I'm interested in. It's just the principles of software collaboratively being made, and now we're starting to bring that into the hardware world, into the corporate world. You know, it starts to infiltrate its way into the mainstream economics. Another example of collaboration, has anyone seen open source ecology? A really, something that really touches my heart, the way they've done this. This is supposed to be the global village construction set. It's 50 different machines that if, for example, we had a collapse, these 50 machines would enable society to progress forward. And they're building these tractors. And I don't know how good the image is here, but this tractor is a really kind of clunky machinery, but really easy just to flex, to adapt it, change it around. But it does exactly what you need it to do. In fact, I think it's a digger, instead of a tractor. But it's open source design, so then you get the plans. If you want to go and make your own one, you're more than welcome to. And it completely undercuts the existing model of delivering tractors to people. And you can imagine in places where they haven't got a huge amount of resources for repairing tractors, this kind of model where you built it in a very simple, clunky way is an easy way to go forward. But these machines that they're looking at are anything from trucks to printers to baking ovens, and they're trying to open source and develop a set of plans to build these. Has anyone seen Good for Nothing events? The Good for Nothing events? Brilliant. It's a group of people, maybe just like yourself, and they'll choose a bunch of charities, two or three charities, and they'll head down and spend 2 days, and they'll do good for nothing to try and further those charities. So the charity or the social enterprise, I think normally it is, the social enterprise will say, I need to do this. I need to do, this is my challenge. And then all of these workers will just come together and help them through this, use their professional skills to take them through it. So it's just, there's just so many of these kind of examples now. We're having this explosion. So I want to take you to the question. I'm going to try and be specific about this question so that we get the right sorts of answers. I think I need to explain sleeping giants a little bit more before we get into the question. So sleeping giants of climate change is an example that I'd like to use. Does anybody know of anything that they would class as being a sleeping giant for climate change, runaway climate change, causing, you know, ever worse destruction and despair? Brilliant example. It's the type of example that I'd like to use. So if the permafrost melt to a certain point, they start to release, and I'm seeing lots of people nodding. And the reason I'm using this example is because we have to kind of get an idea of what a sleeping giant is. And so if the permafrost melt, they will release a quantity of methane, which has a global warming power that makes all of our carbon in the last 150 years pale into insignificance. So if that set of scenario, if that giant awoke, we would trigger runaway climate change with feedback loops making things worse and worse and worse and worse. So what we're looking at now is sleeping giants, social economic sleeping giants, and we're saying, my question to you is, not so much do you believe it's awakening, not so much that, but do you believe it's a giant, an economic giant, that hypothetically could awaken, could trigger a shift change in the globe? So I'd like you to stand up in traditional transition style. If you could all stand up for a second. We're going to do the human barometer. If you believe that cooperation and collaboration is indeed an economic giant and it could hypothetically awaken, I would like you to shift over to my left-hand side. If you believe that it's not a giant and it could not awaken, I mean, it's just that principle of it being an economic giant. If you don't believe it's an economic giant, then go over to the right-hand side. If you're not sure or you've got some debates and questions, find yourself in the middle. But any, you know, if you're completely convinced, go really to the left-hand side. If you're not sure, in the middle. There was a question. I think we can get into that next, yeah. So there's no relevance of time frame, no. It's just that if it is indeed a sleeping giant. So interesting, I'm going to try and find myself into the middle of the room. The clock's here, so I think I'm in the middle of the room. Does everyone, now they know where the middle of the room is, does everyone feel comfortable where they're standing? Okay. Brilliant. So, in principle, I'd just like to take a moment to understand that we've collectively just said that there is something that could shift our social economic structures, because we don't want incremental change. There's no time for incremental change, clearly. We need a shift change. I think that's a lot of people believe that. And we've just collectively said there are these sleeping giants or there is one sleeping giant in the midst. So, okay. What I want to do is just ask yourself about your perspective. And we're not going to hound you or anything of that nature.
I think it depends on people. Cool. Cooperation depends on people. So if it both works and it doesn't work. So that's my view. And it could be a sleeping giant, but it might not be.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, yes, okay, brilliant. I'm going to, do you want to? I felt a need.
I think it is a sleeping giant and it needs to be awoken. I don't think it is working properly yet, but I think it has huge potential.
Okay, I'm going to head over to the back, but as I do, I'm going to pass you.
It's something we touched on earlier on, actually, and I think it's the difference, in a way, between benevolence and self-interest and where we actually stand with that. And we've got different aspects of that going on at any one time at the moment in ourselves, in each of us. And it's about really understanding that truly, you know, sort of, and I'd say, yeah. So right, open it up. Yeah, I think, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Why, yeah, I'm with you. So I'm just going to go over into, you know, this land of positive and hope.
Well, I'm pretty convinced that the existing competition is getting close to a place where it's collapsing. It's like a cancer, and cancers die, get the whole system to die. So I don't think we don't have very much choice. You also see the nature, undeveloped, like bacteria, so that initially there's a lot of competition, but after a certain time they form cells, and they're all based upon cooperation. So I believe we are about to make that shift here in our times, and that's why I'm 100% convinced that we're moving to that. Absolutely.
100%. Anyone else want to say something over here in this part of the world? Brilliant.
I think that the whole sharing economy has been really growing, and I can feel that awakening in the last like 18 months, even especially. And I think younger people are less attached to having things, and it's more about sharing and the connections between things and the experience of things. And so there's the whole sort of profit motive sharing economy, which is the sort of the business side of it, and then there's the community side of the sharing economy, and both of those are booming, and people are really relishing the connections that they have with each other that comes out of that. And so I think, you know, we get to share the resources and have more people use the same resource, and we build community at the same time. So it's reinforcing it, like it feels good to do it. So yeah, and then we're developing the online ways of trust and the mechanisms for working out together and those kind of things. Like we're learning all this stuff, and it's new, but I can feel it really growing.
Brilliant. Before we sit back down, has anyone else got a burning something they want to say on this particular issue? Yes.
I think you can wake a giant that can fall asleep again very quickly. In situations of war, you get very quick cooperation of very large parts of the population. As soon as you get peace, they all fall asleep again. So what I'm thinking is can you get a real long-lasting awakening of the giant? Because if you don't, you're not going to address the permaculture issue, the permafrost issue, sorry.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. The tricky thing of, you know, I don't even think if we awaken these giants, I'm not sure how we address the permafrost issues. But what I want to do, it takes me into this idea that, you know, giants, that the triggering of giants, how to make it permanent. Everyone, find your seats again. I want to, because all I've tried to do so far is explore the fact that a giant exists. What I want you to do in your tables for maybe 4 minutes or so is to explore tipping points, things that could tip that giant so that it would go past the point of no return. And I want to come back to climate change. I've worn this T-shirt here for a very specific reason. What's the traditional tipping point for climate change? Two degrees C. That I think is on the road, but it's not necessarily the first tipping point. You were kind of starting there, I think. Brilliant. Yeah. So let me nail it down. 350 is supposed to be a safe quantity of carbon in the atmosphere. 400 parts per million is the point where you cross the tipping point and you start to trigger environmental, you start to trigger warming that goes to above 2 degrees C, and then that in itself starts to trigger events on the Earth, for example, permafrost melting. And my colleague over there was saying about time frames. And this is the kind of thing that I want to look at with this time frame. First, the tipping point for climate change is a very subtle thing. It's not the giant itself. It's not the permafrost releasing methane. The tipping point happened, or will happen, without a fanfare. It will happen quietly in the atmosphere, in a kind of much more subtle space. It's not a big explosive event. So when we're exploring these social economic tipping points, I want you to hold that in your thought patterns as to when those tipping points might happen in our society, to trigger and release this giant. And so those who are skeptical about the idea of there being a sleeping giant, that's fine, bring that into the discussion. But let's try and explore the possibility of a tipping point for this giant to awaken. 5 minutes starting from now. Okay, one more minute, just to remind you, we're focusing on tipping points, something that might trigger or cross a threshold of some description to start this social economic change running away, and you can't even stop it once it starts running. Okay, everyone, we should be wrapping it up now, the last couple of seconds. What I want you to do then, in your groups, you don't have to really agree, it can be just anyone who fancies trying to reflect very short bursts of what are you kind of explored in terms of tipping points. And if there's one or two left field ones that aren't, you know, they're not the popular ones, they're not the big ones, but you think they're important, please feel free to bring them in there, because I'm really intrigued to understand this diversity of possible tipping points. So I'm going to start over here. Who would like the just short, sharp burst of a tipping point? If you didn't come up with anything, that's fine as well. If you had a chat about economics or something, that's
fine. Well, what we were saying actually was about how, like, the cooperatives are actually already there, and it's that we don't see them, and it's like it's almost like it's coming in, needing to come into view rather than, I mean, it needs to grow, but it's already actually there, and it's needing to see something that's already there.
Communication, then.
Yeah, so it's like they're hidden from view somehow. So,
well, the corporate world is very good at communication, and so the cooperative world needs to up its game. Yeah, that's right. Fancies the talking stick.
I was arguing that actually we've already hit the tipping point, and we experienced it within the Olympic Games and the 70,000 game makers that volunteered their time to welcome us and make the Olympic Games a happy experience. And if we could only tap into that energy and transfer it into something like transition, we would be laughing, essentially.
Brilliant. Any more tipping points of burning things you want to say on this table?
I was casting my mind back to the 80s and the work that went on in this country on racism, anti-racism. And we had successive uprisings or riots, depending on your point of view, year on year, you know, over the 70s and the 80s. And I don't for one minute want to suggest that there is no racism anymore in Britain. There is. But things have really changed in that area. There are still massive fault lines, but it was a sleeping giant that woke up or was woken up and has been sort of responded to.
Yeah, we've crossed the threshold, haven't we, in certain respects? In some respects, yeah. And maybe the Olympics kind of highlighted that in a little way. The talking stick. Are you up for it?
Yeah, sure. Well, we just spoke about small businesses, and you know, has the time come whereby really with the credit problems and so forth, the only way to go is to become a cooperative, corporate collaboration and time banking and so forth. And also there's another point about a potential tipping point when you got people coming out of MBAs, business school, etc., thinking, I'm going to set up a cooperative, I'm not going to set up a PLC. That's potentially a big tipping point. And also just with the recent financial scandals, is that a tipping point where people start to see the crazy system we're in already?
I must admit, there was a little while ago where I thought, you know, the political system's been scandalized, the economic system, the banking system, then you've got the media system. It just, how more, you know, disgusted do we need to get at these kind of things? So I think there is a tipping point in terms of that crumbling. Also good. Any tipping points of, feel free to say those ones that are left field and not quite. We good? I'm coming around to you guys. You've got lots. That's good. I sat on this table, so I can talk for this table. We talked about economic collapse, the kind of the economic recessions and those kind of things, and actually that, you know, when you get forced, if we had an economic collapse, that in itself would be a tipping point. And then we also discussed that places like Greece and Spain are seeing some kinds of kind of shift around because of the economic circumstances that are there.
It's kind of just what's missing from it becoming a tipping point, and it connects with the one from communication that I think the cooperatives need to be conscious of their collective whole and a sense of being a bigger picture, which, you know, that those, I find those figures pretty eye-opening myself. So I suspect that people in different parts of the world who are part of that whole don't actually see themselves as part of that whole. So it seems to be something that's maybe missing at the moment.
Consolidating, understanding who you are. Brilliant. Any more for any more on this table?
Something that gives me hope, I think, is how fast something can tip. I think there is the potential for a huge sharing culture to trend to really take off. Things like punk in before, or even the hippies in the 60s, it was the largest movement of people in the US history when the hippies left their conventional lives and went to try and experiment in the desert or whatever. So I think there's an opportunity right now of, because of all the other things that have been said, the necessity and the context, for a huge trend in sharing culture and moving from ownership, as been said, and livelihoods and enterprises to facilitate that, I think is hopeful.
Brilliant. Anyone on this table?
I was thinking about this open source and like the Pirate Bay and things like this in youth culture. It's like all teenagers today do this, and it's kind of a generation issue, but it's already there and it's kind of just sneaked in.
Yeah,
so that's
natural, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's really good, and I got some really interesting things coming out of there. I've done this process a couple of times before, and I want to reflect back on my favorite tipping points, so I can pass those on to you, and hopefully you get excited about them in the same way as I got excited about them. We're not necessarily excited about this one. Once I found a psychologist said, just the sheer quantity of people, a psychotherapist, I think, the quantity of people coming in with mental health problems. It was like a kind of, we've reached a kind of state of collect, you know, social state of mental health that is in itself kind of a tipping point, in a negative sense, essentially. But the tipping point that I think we've already crossed, and I would argue that we've already crossed the tipping point, I think the day that Wikipedia showed everybody that you could cooperate and collaborate and deliver something far more in-depth and quicker and better, and it just proved, it just knocked back the myth that competition is the best model. The myth that the fittest comes out of competition, that kind of, that myth holds the whole kind of competition, capitalist ideal together. That myth is what's there. And I think when we started to cooperate on projects like Wikipedia, we just broke that myth subtly in our brains, in the brains of millions. So I'd argue that a tipping point has been crossed, but there we go. Okay, moving on to our next sleeping giant. Okay, so I'm not, yeah. The next sleeping giant isn't quite as clear cut. The other one had, you know, the cooperation and collaboration movement was a kind of positive thing. The next sleeping giant that I'd like to explore is kind of two sides of the same coin. It's got negatives and positives to it. And so I believe we're entering into this era of the more than profit kind of era, where profit could be a factor, you know, people could be working for profit, but that there is a massive quantity of people, the majority of the enterprises or organizational structures fit into a kind of more than profit bracket. And then the negative side of that coin is also the end of the economic growth, the end of the profit era, the end of the era where profit is God, you know. I don't know whether economic growth is the master of profit or the other way around, but they kind of intertwine these two things, and we're coming to the end of that era. So it is a, so the reason, I mean, anybody who knows the peak oil kind of arguments, I'm gonna whisk through the graphs. But the reason we're kind of coming to the end of economic growth, this is a graph from the 1950s all the way up until 2000 and something or other that's lost off the bottom there. But it just shows the intertwined relationship between economic growth and the supply of oil. And we haven't had an increase in supply of oil since 2005, 2006. I might be corrected by people know more than me about it. But we've kind of plateaued. And so there was a complete dependency in the last 60 years on oil supply to be growing for us to have an economic growth economy. And that's now stopped. So that's one of the first kind of backdrops of why economic growth has run its course. This next graph shows all of these kind of dark shaded areas, if you can see those there, are the recessions, the global recessions in the last 40 odd years. And this ziggity ziggity line graph is showing the price of oil spiking at different points in our last 40 or 50 years. So you can see quite clearly that we have this kind of oil price spike just before a recession, an oil price spike just before a recession, an oil price spike just before a recession. Maybe, I don't know, an oil price spike in prices just before a recession. And this was the 2008 recession with an oil price spike. And I don't know, a year ago, we had an oil price spike again. And following in its wake was the current kind of recession that the Eurozone is going through. And so, quite frankly, put it simply, there is a price of oil that the economy can stand. Once oil goes past a certain amount of price, because oil is so embedded in everything we do, you just can't grow any further. There's interesting stuff on that as well, but that's just the spike that we've just had. So just cutting through that. So there's that reason that I believe the economy is running out of steam. The whole kind of growth-based economy has no more legs. There's also the kind of Charles Eisenstein's argument that we have nothing left to commercialize. We've commercialized the commons, we've commercialized just about everything we used to have for free, and there's very little on the planet that we can still grow and commercialize. So we have the peak everything kind of argument for the fact that the economy is running out of steam, the growth economy is running out of steam. So on the flip side of all this, we have the more than profit world. So it's probably the most symbolic thing of a more than profit world is the charity shop. Now, I remember when I was little, not too little actually, I was coming out of university or college, sorry, we used to call it the Oxfam shop. I never used to call a charity shop a charity shop because there was only one charity shop on my street, on my high street, and it was the Oxfam shop. And that was how it was known. I don't know if that's nationally the same. But we've seen the growth in these kind of businesses. It is a business. It's a high street business. We've seen the growth in these kind of charities on our high streets starting to replace old school businesses. And we've also seen the growth of products, skincare products, sponsored by or supported by skincare charities, and the integration of these kind of more than profit activities coming into the mainstream commercialization. So. And I think that's indicative, it's symbolic of a growth of the kind of charity and not-for-profit world. I've got a little video that I want to show you about this kind of growth. So when we think about this, what I want us to think about is that it's not just charity shops. We've got the cooperative movement. We've got billions of people working in the cooperative movement already. And so this economic giant is kind of layered on top of the cooperative movement. We've then got the charity kind of movement growing as it is. And then we've got the social enterprise movement as well that's layered on top of this. So collectively, this kind of giant has this kind of diverse faces, but it's huge in terms of the quantity of organizational structures that use a more than profit approach. I'm going to try and put a video on. It's not going to work. I haven't got any sound. Okay, has anybody seen Paul Hawkins' video, his five-minute Blessed Unrest introduction? It's incredibly inspiring, and part of what he says, he, he shows this list of enterprise of not-for-profits, basically. And he says, he starts showing this list that's going up, and he says, this list could go up for days and days and days. And he starts speeding it up. And all of these were not-for-profits that are appearing all over the world. And my gut feeling is most of them, and there were some 150,000 not-for-profits that were just doing things in their communities. You know, do we sense this in our communities? These little kind of community group not-for-profits or enterprises just popping up all over the place, these new ones, over the last 15 to 20 years. So this is the kind of trend that we're in. So that's my basic argument for there being a sleeping giant. I'm not going to ask you whether you believe that it's awakening. What I want to ask you is whether you believe that this is big enough and powerful enough to be a sleeping giant of economic shift change. Whether it's going to work or not, I just want to get a feeling of whether you think this is a sleeping giant that, you know, hypothetically could trigger. Whether you believe it triggers or not, that's another thing. So once again, if we could stand up. Okay. And once again, we know the drill. It's the left-hand side of the room if we think there's a giant in that last few minutes of talking, and it's the right-hand side of the room, and it's the middle if you're not sure. Or if you don't, you know, it's more complicated. Yeah, sorry, it's my left-hand side. Stage left. Brilliant. Okay, not too dissimilar. I think there's a few less 100%ers, but it's not too dissimilar from where we were at last time. Here's the middle of the room. And just to sense everybody, if we could, that there is a general belief that there's a sleeping giant, an economic sleeping giant that could trigger. And I think it's important that we kind of check into ourselves and say that in general, the people I'm with today believe that sleeping giant exists. And I think that's positive. We need to keep that with us. We need to keep that positive vision of the future and hold that, because these are really important in tricky times. So just coming over here, do you two want to give me you happy to give me a little kind of introduction of your thoughts?
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say ladies first, but then...
Okay. Are you sure? I'm just... I do believe in it, and I think that this is a really positive thing that could awaken. I'm just thinking from my perspective, I've now finished university and I have a load of debt to pay. And I think that to have this volunteering and this non-profit organization, I need to pay that off at some point. And I don't know, I just kind of feel like a lot of kids my age are going to have that. And
you've got to be out there making money.
Yeah.
I think for all that will happen in the world and where money will become less, there will always be people with money. There will always be people who want to attempt to make some kind of profitable business. And there will be people who will want some kind of prestigious product. So I do believe that homes will still be wanted, special cars, good food, and there will always be some profit. How much of that is debatable, but I don't think that we will ever see the end of profit.
Brilliant. And just to be clear, I think profit can be in the mix in the future economy, but it's not the master of the economy. I think is the slight. As I come through to the other end, has anyone got something in the middle they'd like to say?
I don't see many companies embracing the idea of obsolescence or non-obsolescence. I don't see Apple making an iPhone that's going to last for 10 years when that happens.
Yeah, I think it's not very visible in the mainstream. Kind of, you know, convince a business not to make profit, that's going to be fun. Yeah. Anyone else got something that they want to say as I walk through? So towards the back.
Well, I'm standing here because I am hopeful. I could be arguing the same point over here, but we are seeing now evidence. The biggest, it's not a hotel chain, but bigger than hotel chains now are enterprises that are facilitating the sharing of idling spaces, Airbnb, It's a for-profit company, but it facilitates sharing, and it's now bigger than most hotel chains. And that's in 2 years. It's relatively quick. Car clubs are the same, you know, so more and more people are realizing the burden of ownership and moving to some form of sharing, and that can be facilitated by a for-profit company. So it's not the end of profit, but as you say, it's not the dominance of profit.
I just think that we've come to the end of growth. I don't think we're going to have any choice. I don't think the planet's, we can't grow anymore. Like, we've got peak oil, we've got peak everything. I don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but we have come to the end of a growth economy because there's nothing left on the planet to grow with. And so, regardless of what happens, yeah, the growth paradigm's gone. We can't, it's just obsolete.
Brilliant, and that's why I'm hoping that this other more than profit world starts to replace it, so it's not just a negative thing.
Yeah, I was interested, I found it interesting to see that I was more excited about this sleeping giant than about the other one, and what resonates with me is the growth that I've seen in the eco-label world that I've been working with a lot. It's been skyrocketing, and also even big companies that I used to think are terribly evil, they are thinking about these questions, and that gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, just about everything, organic labels, fair trade, anything in this world, you know, green building materials is going through a mild boom. And if you look at it on a generational scale, you could say this is really gonna make some major impact in 10 years. Okay, so if we head back to our seats and we'll go through a similar kind of process of exploring tipping points of this particular sleeping giant. And again, they could be subtle tipping points. They don't have to be big fanfare moments. But I want us to try and collectively use the wisdom of the room to see if we can think of or identify where we think the tipping points are. So spend 5 minutes and have a chat. Okay, one more minute, and we'll start to wrap it up for this discussion. No, keep on talking. You've got one more minute of chatting. Okay, the last few seconds. Okay, everybody, back in the room. I'm going to start over here, guys, if you don't mind. Did we manage to explore any tipping points?
Yes. First of all, I need to say that I don't see the giant as being a single creature. I see it as something holistic, and holistic creatures tend to breathe fire, steam, and all sorts of things. So I think we need to look at a series of issues that are beginning to occur. The political, religious issues of the Middle East are symptomatic of what can occur when you have the sort of instantaneous communication we have. Some of the elements that will trigger something that I anticipate will occur are of a technical nature. For instance, the Iraqis wanted to start importing their oil at prices expressed in euros. Within 3 months of them announcing that, Britain and America marched in there. Last week, the Chinese said they want oil invoiced in their own currency from now onwards. Now, that's a different order of magnitude. If the Chinese succeed with that, it'll mean the collapse of the United States dollar. That means the collapse of the largest economy in the world. If that happens, you know, are we ready in terms of what will be put in its place? The dragon is indeed waking up, but I'm not too sure we're ready on the scale that we're talking about to know what to put in its place, if it is necessary, because I think, you know, we're going to find ourselves much more expressed in terms of communities. One of the members of the table here said, what about weather? Well, in the United States, we're having dust bowl conditions. We are experiencing shortages of wheat in China of 50 million tons. They can't get that on the world market because nobody is producing those sort of quantities. So hunger is going to be another driving factor. So I see a dragon that is probably no longer asleep. It's just stirring and deciding where it is going to awaken. And frankly, I'm excited by that, because that is the only way. Short, sharp pain, and we'll then be able to reconstruct.
I'm glad you're excited by short, sharp pain. I'm sure I can pair you up with someone in the bar tonight. Any tipping points coming out of this table? There's no obligation to have tipping points in your mind.
It's just an observation around for myself in the last year, because I've been involved in a very positive movement. Because I've been involved in the transition movement quite actively for the last year, it's changed my perceptions from a helpless position. So that's an interesting one.
Yeah, a sense of empowerment.
Yeah, so even though I know hasn't changed me intellectually in terms of what's going on, but it's changed how I feel about it a lot. So
a personal tipping point almost.
This might be counterintuitive, but I don't believe that we're at the end of profit, nor do I believe that we're at the end of growth. And I say that to say that profit is a part of the traditional business model that compensates for uncertainty, for new growth in terms of replacing things, et cetera. It's all built in, and I don't want to get into that discussion. The idea of growth, of course we're going to have growth. We don't want our children to stop growing at a certain size, because that's not the order of the day. We're going to have a different kind of growth, and it's going to be very real and very positive. So, you know, I don't think you throw out the baby with the bathwater. I think that we can have all of these things, but we have to control it so that it's not a cancer like it is now. It's not focused on negative results or ignoring humanity. It's part of it. Growing is part of it. We have a tremendous growth curve ahead of us.
Yeah. I particularly like the idea that I think money is a stupid thing to grow. It's one of the least interesting things we could try and grow.
I would like to put that in slightly different terms, that one needs a paradigm where the growth and profit are separated. Profit is an indicator of efficiency of an organization, and the organizations that don't make profits eventually run out of cash and fail, and they are replaced by the efficient organizations that have surpluses to invest in those areas. I think overall you can certainly have a global pause or in growth itself, but individual areas will always grow and others will decay within that overall blanket.
Brilliant. Okay.
I'd like to follow on from what that gentleman was saying over there about it being a holistic answer, rather than the sharp pain, I was moving into a different direction, which is that I think that all of the things that you're talking about are a perspective or moral shift, and I think that these are almost byproducts of a perspective shift. And so actually when that happens more, then we'll have lots of other sleeping giants are waking, and it's almost as if these are byproducts.
Yeah, I'm keen to know that, understand that perspective shift. I think that's where we're, that's the fundamentals. That's like that kind of looking at things differently or believing things differently. But I don't, I don't fully understand all of that. So I think that's where it's at.
When we discussed, I made the point. I think that people who are interested in profit and growth are always going to be interested in profit and growth, and there will be some people who want to wring the last dregs of profit and growth out of the system, even if there is a natural leveling off trying to happen because of peak everything. And Morag made the point that I've forgotten what you said. Oh, the what we could end up with is the extreme wealthy, maybe less of them, but they're still going to be there. And the rest of us, you know, falling behind because it physically can't be done. But there will always be those who are wringing those last drops.
Okay. Any more? Tipping points. When are things going to cross a threshold?
I think what we were looking at was both the mindset shift, but we were also looking at the basic infrastructure and the financial instruments and saying that particularly a capital-intensive business, currently it's very challenging for that organisation not to get sucked into the current model and then be addicted to keeping growing just in order to survive. And when we've got more other potentials in there for businesses to be able to do that in a different way, then I think more organisations will avoid that particular trap.
Any more on this table? Good to go. Okay. Any tipping points, any kind of thresholds that we could cross?
Not really a tipping point, but just in answer to the question, is the end of profit and growth paradigm a sleeping giant of economic shift change? So is it going to be a tipping point? I think if you're reading that and saying that one thing we mentioned here was that we're talking about profit of that's linked to the use of resources or use of a natural carrying capacity or even a social carrying capacity, the constant growing of the use of those resources, that's something that can really is going to hit a tipping point and needs to change. But if you think of profit and growth in units that are linked to non-resource issues, so social transaction, you can have a whole economy based around the units of social transaction, which can be linked to a monetary form or not. And you can have profit of that, and you can have growth of that. So it's what is it linked to? What is it feeding off? What is it measuring in terms of transaction? That's the issue, and that's the shift, which is maybe not an economic shift. It's what is the economic measuring? What is it linked to?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I've failed you slightly here because I should have really said the end of profit and economic growth, because that's slightly more clearer. And I think it's good that we're looking that we're going to try and grow much more positive things as well. Any quick, short, sharp bursts in terms of
representative social democracy might change. And I think there's some dangers within that change, like we've seen through the war on terrorism and the way in which that reaction by the United States has caused a lot of problems in the world, but particularly the way in which something on the lines of environmental degradation, the problems around seeing sort of like a green fascism raising itself as a giant.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to try and wrap it up. Has anyone got anything really essential they want to say on this? Have you cracked it? You know what the tipping point is?
Me anyway, like not cracked here, but it's like I think this is the biggest one out of all of them, really, because I think most people in the world don't live their whole lives by profit. I think it's a tiny minority and they dominate the rest of us. But I think the big one at the moment is actually that we're not near a tipping point, but they're almost about to damn themselves, because we've got a government at the moment that's marketizing everything, you know, our public services, the police, sections of the police, everything along those lines. And I think when that fails, as spectacularly as it will fail, it will prove the point that profit isn't the way of proving they're producing the fittest, and it isn't always necessary, and that might be the tipping point, hopefully.
Brilliant. Any more? Because I'm conscious we're coming towards the end, so if there's any real kind of, you've got it.
Just want to share some experience. I'm a member of the business world, so I'm a member of this network of 20,000 CEOs, and this awareness that there's an end of the growth paradigm is definitely not present there. We have 10 different social networks dealing with poverty and environmental issues, but that's not translated into a feeling that the growth paradigm is going to stop. There's a lot of postings on discussion boards, how one can take advantage of the present crisis. Prices are low, You can buy cheap, but there's nothing on the discussion boards talking about the end of the growth paradigm. So that's why I personally believe in this gentleman that we need a major crisis for at least that segment to wake up, as sad as I am about that.
Fair play. Okay, we're coming close to the end. So what I want to do is, someone talked about timescales of things, and I want to just do a little kind of note check on timescales. The last time I did this, someone reminded me that the TV, when they invented the TV, it took 50 years for it to kind of filter into most of the Western homes. Then when they invented the mobile phone, it took maybe 10 or 12 years to get into our pockets. And then the iPod or the MP3 took about 3 years to get through. So if we do cross a threshold, I thought it's really interesting, this concept of speeding up how quickly these things can manifest throughout the globe. And that clearly is the case in lots of different ways. What I want to do to end, I'm just going to introduce a sleeping giant. I'm not going to go into it very much. That's actually my wife and her grandmother. And it's neither of those are giants. They're normal-sized people. The caption's not quite working. But essentially, the sleeping giant that I wanted to introduce is the DIY culture. And I wanted to say to you guys that in Brazil, where my wife lives, the DIY culture is just the norm. When I go to see my wife's family who live in the hinterlands, in the small kind of towns, there's a ream of people turning up with a quilt that they've just made, or a jewelry box. The way they eat their food, none of it's processed, or very little of it's processed. They do that job themselves of cooking the food and stuff. And so, and we're also seeing a renaissance in the UK. I saw yesterday the walk-on thing, where if you grow your own food, walk-on, I think was the way it went, and the majority of the people growing their food, quite rightly, if they're here. So that kind of culture is already very prevalent in the BRIC nations, in Brazil, China, and India, and Russia, and Africa as well. It's us that lost that connection to making things. It's us in the richer nations. We had the luxury to stop making things. So that giant exists. And in my mind, I'm not going to go through the process with that. I'm not going to try and convince you too much on that, but it's another giant. There's other giants out there that I think are just economic, sitting under the radar. And so what I wanted to do for the last few minutes is to bring it back to your own lives now and say, let's have a little chat in our groups again. And rather than, I don't really want this to be a discussion about how I prepare for collapse, because that's really easy to get into that kind of mindset when we're talking about this. But I want it to be more about what can I do in my personal life to increase or bring about that tipping point or that possible moment of change. What can I do, even though it's insignificant in the macro scale of things, my own personal life, what can I be doing to be adding to that kind of drops of water or that final straw. So just reconvene in your groups and have a chat and think about, bring it back to your personal life, just for the last few minutes, if we can kind of make it tangible. I would like to say that at the same time, preparing for collapse, the things you do for preparing for collapse may be the same things that you would do to bring about the tipping point. But I don't want the conversation being driven by the idea that I'm preparing for collapse, if you understand what I mean. We're actually now at 5:59, so it's the end of the session. Does anybody want to say something just to help us end the session? Is there anything really important you want to say, or shall I just end it? Go for it.
The idea of the tipping point, one of the things that I'm taking away as a personal inspiration is that whatever you do, whether it's like yesterday I sent out our mailing list, you know, it's all maybe contributing to that awareness, to that tipping over. So every little, and the cool thing about a tipping point is that it's not actually it's not always like linear or growth, isn't it? You know, so you get to a certain point and that could be the point that just knocks things over. So I found that inspiring.
I've been inspired by you being talking about personal, the kind of things that you're inspired by. Or is there anything that people taking away from this that has taken, given them something positive to take away from this?
So Morag next to me was just said something that I wholly agree with, and I'm going to take away that actually building community is right on so many levels, and that actually that's something that we can do and continue doing, and that may in itself build towards tipping point.
Yeah. Is anyone else taking something away positive from this that they'd like to kind of...
Yeah. It just felt strongly, I'm sensing a energy descent plan concept and a negative feedback loop. I'm thinking in terms of sustainability ascent plan. We are in a position where we can really create something that's beautiful, that's inevitable, and it's all in the mindset. If you're thinking in negative terms, then you get negative, a vibration about you. We should be, and I'm very excited to be here.
Brilliant. We're excited to have you. Representing Philadelphia.
Might I suggest that we take some of the positive energy that we have received over this weekend, we go home and we take that energy and use it on a very personal basis. The kind of tipping points that have been mentioned have been large, cooperative things. But how about individual people? We all have tipping points too. Why don't we take our positive energy home with us and help to prevent somebody else from tipping over the edge if we have enough energy to sustain ourselves?
No more. I think that's enough said. We'll leave it at that. And my final point is, if some of these tipping points do trigger, that whole lot just comes starts. That's the feedback loops, you know, you start triggering off all these other bits and pieces. They become a natural byproduct of that kind of runaway process if we go over a tipping point. So, yeah, that's it. That's it. I hope, we can be positive about the future, a little bit more positive about the future. Have a good day.